Welcome to The Cyber Show. In this episode, we're going to revisit the Online Safety Bill, and although we were all in full support of the Online Safety Bill, there is a concern that it would be used to water down encryption across the UK. We've heard some news this week that encryption has started to be watered down by our government, so we wanted to do a little side-by-side comparison and discuss the Online Safety Bill once more. We also look at some cybersecurity news and have a little bit of a rant about drivers and computers. At the bottom of that article, because the UK government just did a deal with Apple iOS to get a backdoor. So they've now changed their advice to say, don't do your own encryption, just use Apple.
Just use the one. No,
I'm finding it hard to track this. So where we're up to is the bit where this is so 1984. So I don't know what week we're on, but at this stage, the UK government's advice is don't use encryption. And they've taken out all of their advice from the NCSC's document.
There's a paragraph at the end, which I can probably paste in. This is the TechCrunch one about the removal.
TechCrunch article, yeah.
Yeah, it starts with the removal. Says the removal of the encryption advice comes weeks after the UK government secretly ordered Apple to build a backdoor that would give authorities access to users' encrypted iCloud data. Following the order, first reported by the Washington Post, Apple pulled its ADP feature in the UK and confirmed to TechCrunch that the feature will no longer be made available to new users in the UK and its current users would eventually need to disable it. Apple is challenging the UK's data access order in the Investigatory Powers Tribunal, IPT, reported by the Financial Times this week.
And apparently they're asking people, it does say at one point, that they're being asked to do ADP instead. Yeah, they're basically telling them to go on and use those instead, which is just insane. So they're telling the guys in the legal department, you just use Apple. Just use Apple.
Don't worry, just use Apple. They've got it all sorted.
You don't need to use your own encryption to cover all that legal and important data because we want to see what's going on. We want to see the real guilty fuckers.
Yeah.
Despite what the courts
say. They're not. They're not because if you look at who this documentation's aimed at, you know, the real guilty fuckers. So the cohort we're looking at is solicitors, bankers, people doctors, people, professionals handling people's sensitive data, right? This is the group that are most likely to be readers of this kind of advice.
Hey, that fella's talking about me.
And that makes a difference, doesn't it?
And so when they've taken out this bit, which is sound advice, so what I'd like to do it is like, let's just read it. Like, you know, this is our advice, NCSC, sincere, sensible stuff, right? And then see what happens after the politicians have had their claws on it and ripped out, you know, all of the really important good stuff. So
page four.
Encryption. Yeah, but they've pulled this information for the lawyers, right?
It's for everybody. It's a generally available document, but
if you actually try and go to the like direct NCSC,
it's not there anymore.
No, it's not there. They've pulled the PDF.
Fucking PDF's gone.
Yeah.
They work for the government, so they have to do what the government tell them.
That is a really, really important topic. Is what you claim you're doing civic cybersecurity, as we call it? Yeah. If it is, how much are you? If you say it is and think it is, how much are you deviating from that under political pressure?
Yeah.
And what's the purpose?
The same question has always been there in education as well. I mean, like what drives educational syllabuses, you know?
What's the underlying purpose of spying on that data, though, really, for the government? That's the question. I get the banking data. Yeah, that may be important to peer into because, you know, people are pushing money, tax money, out of seas, and it would be nice. And also there is, you know, benefit fraud and other types of fraud that they do want to track. I get that. What about the legal data? Because they already have a lot of the legal data. This feels like they're going for the private legal data that lawyers are having, that private and confidential conversation they're having with their clients. It feels like that's something that's being potentially targeted in this remit, because it would potentially give essentially courts, you know, the prosecution, who is the government, the ability to read someone's defence before they give it, potentially.
What one hopes is it turns out that it's merely money, that this is just grubby. It's just grubby corruption.
Right.
And then you can find some people to blame in the structure and say, you were corrupt, you're being grubby, throw them out. because the alternative is much more sinister, isn't it?
It is. It would be really interesting to see that if you're going to put in a law like this, we need to see why we're looking into that data and what type of data and where it's going. It's not okay to just pull this encryption information, say, go and use our backdoor system, and then not know what they're actually looking for.
Well, we saw this happening from the online safety bill, because they were talking about encryption at that point, and they were already having their fingers on, like, oh, what if we just, you know, we don't really need that for citizens, do we? And then that's the kind of point where all this started going wrong.
It's just like when PGP was created and they just arrested the guy as a terrorist, you know. Christ, America, you know. And yet we used it, you know. They arrested him as a terrorist, and then they're like, oh shit, we need this. Oh, we should let him out, you know. He's actually done us a treat.
Yeah.
You know, didn't say sorry too much. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But again, we're in support of things like, you know, when they tricked all the drug dealers and criminals to use a so-called backdoored encrypted phone. That's great. It's clever. So we are.
That was a great sting. That was that the FBI sting with the fake encrypted phone was absolutely awesome.
It was, you know, great.
That's the kind of investigatory craft that you respect and love, and you hope that there are police out there that can do that kind of stuff. All of this kind of dark peering into people's lives and through deception, because at some point, really quickly, deception enters into this, and it changes the whole tone of government. It literally does. A government at that point ceases to be that socially contracted entity that you love and believe in, but it's part of your country. It's not. It becomes the enemy, and that's an American way of seeing things. And we've never liked that in this country. No. We've never been like that. Our government is our friend, and so it has to be held accountable on the same basis that you hold a friend accountable, right? And when you see shit fuckery going on, your attitude changes towards your government.
No, it needs to be more open, because like I said, if it's the stuff that we're all supporting, great, have more tax money to some extent. It's our defence. The budget's going up. That's what we want. Mm. You know, and we have the NCSC, and they do work really hard to keep us all safe. But at the end of the day, if you're just trying to get everyone to go onto a backdoor system, that's way above that privacy line. That's breaking our human rights in the UK.
If you're charged into a position of care where your job is to give good advice to people and to look after them, and then that consciousness is and conscience is manipulated and you're directed in the advice you give for somebody else's ends, right? That is so compromising of your own integrity and dignity.
You mean the US healthcare system?
Well, I don't know much about that, Helen. I'm thinking about like what makes intelligence services work well,
right?
For their people. That's a really big question, right?
You know, this whole kind of habit of mass surveillance being a good security posture is incredibly shallow-minded, and I don't know, there's obviously someone in or some many people in the government in certain positions who think that is a good security posture, and it is good for the country to be doing mass surveillance.
It's too much data.
It's
just collecting billions and billions and billions of rows of data in a second that you need a huge, great, big load of power, which we're running low on, to sort through, when actually we could have just created a program that's a bit more targeted and a bit more direct or target. Well, they have tried to target specific industries.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, with most extreme, we have to think about computers. There's only so much damage you can do from a computer. I know, obviously, things can get hacked, but at that point, there is always a traceable element, or like if there was a planned, I know it's good to have intelligence to maybe stop things before they happen, but that requires physical intervention as well, which does still work and is effective. You know, there's a reason we have physical security at airports, even though they just scanned your Facebook account. Well, doesn't matter. You could still have something in your pocket. That there is an element of physical security that's never going to be there, and that's a good thing.
Just spying on everyone's data is not only inefficient, it's totally inefficient.
Yeah.
Because it's too much data. Yeah. It's going to cloud things. You're just, you know, collecting data on citizens. Well, we don't want you to collect loads of data on citizens. That's 1984. No. What we want you to do is take all the data that you need to have, filter out and not even touch the data that you don't need, and focus on what we already have. and only stick on that. So it's not okay to just say, right, just pull encryption, let everyone be spied on. It's just inefficient. It's not going to work. It's going to completely backtrack. What we're going to end up with is a load of data we can sell on, but we'll probably end up with a few more terror attacks because we haven't been able to actually stop them.
I think the main problem is that the fact that they're applying this to certain well-known vendors like Apple, those are the people that are least likely to be doing things that are illegal or damaging, because they're going to be using encrypted channels that they've already made themselves anyway. They're just targeting the people that are using normal platforms. Well, and Apple have got their own detection systems built into like iCloud for things like indecent images of children. It's already there.
But they're not very good, though. We all know that. When you
they're good. They work.
They are quite good because they're using AI training.
They work.
And there's lots of elements there which is going to help protect that information and catch people out. So the safety netting is already there for things like Apple. What the government want to do is just remove, and Google do it now as well, which is basically anyone who uses an
Android. I guess I fear on that when we ask the private companies to stop moderating their own data completely and then letting us know when there's a criminal, they haven't got the training. They don't have experts like the NCSC do, who are actually able to connect the dots together. I feel that you might end
up... they're just not the police.
No, they're not. They're a private data company. They're not able to look at that data and actually go, oh, hang on, these people have been spotted in this investigation before. We think these two OCGs are related. It looks like they've merged. They don't have the data to do that. Yes, they can.
When you get into a cultural change in which really major things like institutions collapse, crumble, disappear, lose their respect for them, that whole social concepts like police come into question. And so, you know, kind of what you're seeing, if you're going to go towards an American libertarian anarchy of devolving your institutions to the extent that you've just basically outsourced and devolved policing, right? The people who should be most kind of pissed, the most curious about their future job prospects that would be like the police, you know, and the intelligence services themselves, because you know what they've seen, you know, is they've been nibbled at and nibbled at and nibbled at until, you know, what is GCHQ in the end of the day but somebody sitting in an office signing off on documents to buy Amazon cloud stuff, you know? It's just like one guy who could rent a table somewhere.
They might have had that power in law for a couple of years now.
I think it's the online safety bill. What its real intention was to weaken encryption across the EU.
And we talked about that, didn't we? We wanted that, yeah.
Apart from this.
So it's up to us to defend it now. If it's being abused and misused, then it's up to us to take that online safety bill and say, hey, we fought for this. You are abusing it, you know, and we can draw more attention to those last minute provisions, you know, the ones that they always tuck in at the end, which were, you know, that was the real payload of that bill. Right?
And just for political neutrality, this was actually a document that was drawn up and processed by the Conservatives that was put into place already. I feel like Labour are going to get a lot of stick for this, but actually it's not their bill at all. It was already in place. It's already going through. This was already on the remit, so they can't really stop it. So, and what they're doing is they're carrying on with it. And what we might see is what Labour like to do is that they'll actually increase those powers of spying and that sort of capability. I don't know if that's necessarily happening this time, though. I feel that what we're doing is just we're cuddling up to Trump and America at the moment. Here's our data, here's our money. Will you buy our Marmite and cheese, please?
It might be. There might be kind of like little desperate backroom deals going on at the moment with the way that, you know, things are so turpulent. And there'll be people taking advantage of that, little opportunists and stuff like that. I'd be much more concerned if this marked a more general direction of the UK becoming even more vassal to the US than it has been for like the last 40 years.
We were saying that when we were in Florida to people, and they're like, you know, how do we fix it? It's like, look, you're going to have to go through all the periods of history that we all went through with democracy, because it's just the chain of events, and you can clearly follow that. Go and read books that had democracy, and people like the Roman Empire when they didn't have democracy, and see where you're going into at the moment.
Yeah, just read some European history. find some European history books.
Right.
Read, you know, just find, read them and right. then just start, kind of see that all of this techno-fascist shit has been done before and it didn't work.
No, it doesn't work.
So it kind of got unfashionable at some point for people to step up and to be responsible. And there are certain sort of professions where that persists, like professionals, maybe like for teachers, for doctors, you know, for experts of any kind, that willingness, that civic willingness to sort of stand up and be responsible in a situation. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a reservoir of it, and that's what governments are built from, right?
Right.
And you haven't got that anymore. Like, where is your supply of responsible, civically minded people going to come from now?
But how did we get there as a nation? We got there from being an empire that collapsed and an empire that did pretty nasty stuff. And we've sort of learned from that. We have. We went through the real empire collapse was World War II. People bloody died. Our buildings were decimated. We have learned that one empire is not a good idea. Colonialism is bloody awful. And our role seems to be, and I'm very happy with this role, of just reminding countries very politely and helping countries to see when they're doing those wrongs, because we have learned from them. We've written loads of books. It's like, no, don't do that. We've done this. It doesn't work. You know, here's a load of stuff on it.
You know, you're right, Helen. You're absolutely right. But I think there's bigger institutions and kind of bigger things at stake than the sort of the British versus American and European view. Because what happened after World War II is you've got all of these like institutions, like starting off with like League of Nations, you know, and then becoming United Nations and things like that, and UNESCO and the whole concept of multilateralism, the whole concept of a global politic really came in then, you know. And I see that that's actually being destroyed, that, you know, that we're regressing back into all sorts of nationalism and deinstitutionalization. And you know, that's just not good for peace, and it's not good for trade. The only people that are gonna benefit out of that is the grave diggers. Yeah,
yeah. And this is a process that's happening online, and we're seeing that. We saw social media just go right wing, and it's not getting any better, is it? It's getting worse and worse and worse.
Well, the thing is, if you're the leader of a very wealthy tech company, you're right, not going to want to be messing with the president, who can affect your net value and worth of your businesses and stuff like that. I guess that's why they took that sudden turn, because it wasn't like a gradual kind of, we're going to decrease the moderation a bit because it's a little bit too much. It's like, we're removing all of it and you can post all the Nazi stuff you want on Facebook and we'll promote it for you. It's like,
no. But they were already making money out of right-wing stuff.
Exactly. They're not doing it for the good of the community, because they don't want to suppress people's voices. It's because they make more money on it. Because
they make more money from anger, because people are more likely to use the app. And I remember doing that.
Social media makes money. It's people that are angry are spending more time on it. It's a trap.
But they have changed. I mean, if you look back to 2016, pre-Brexit, my Facebook, everyone was using Facebook. You know, I had very young children at the time, so I was sharing with my parents. But every time I logged on, instead of seeing lovely pictures of my friends enjoying their life and, you know, cute little pictures and videos of their children doing funny things, all I've got is political stuff on my feed from my friends. They're actually sharing it, and it took over. And it felt like an assault. And I was very young. I was in my 20s back then. So, you know, I thought, well, I've got to pick up the bandwagon here, and I need to put out posts that counter all of this stuff. And you were dying in a sea, and you were falling out with people. And at that point, people who didn't agree with you, they removed themselves from your digital life, and you lost contact with those people. We literally got divided almost in half in most of the West overnight by Russia, let's face it, because that's where it was coming from. And we're still seeing the fallout of that 9 years later.
I think there's a very wide kind of normalization of chaos and confusion on social media, and it's getting worse every time I look on it. And I'm thinking, and the amount of people that I'm seeing that are interacting with this, like malicious posting, the anger that people are, it's like, if you're angry, you shouldn't be adding to this post. You should just be leaving, exiting it the entirety of the social media platform that you're on. And that there is like a max exodus of X or Twitter.
Oh yeah, definitely.
People are which is probably what should be happening because it's taking away the interaction on the platform, which is what's making the money.
Well, we welcomed all those people as the cyber show. We were like, welcome yeah. to the app that's not all evil. we're all here sharing research, read some real stuff for once.
A lot of people on social media, all I'm seeing is anger and and this is what's making the money for these platforms, and this is what they want. And I just find it so infuriating that people just feel like it's all under the premise of like communicating.
You're getting angry about it, Ed. If it's making you, if it's infuriating, it's getting you angry. You get on social media and make sure. That's what we'll do. Yeah.
Except
that algorithm kicks in when you do something negative to a social media platform and decides it won't put out any of your stuff to anyone but your mother. So yeah, they're bent. That's how the algorithm works. If you talk out about some of these companies, you don't get sponsorship, you don't get heard, you don't get paid. So it's a way of silencing. In fact, art itself and media has been completely decimated to some extent.
Well, it's not social media anymore.
But governments, people seem to think it's governments that have done it. It's not, it's private companies. Yeah. Private companies are only going to pay for things that boost their product and boost their way of working.
Roy on Tech Rights, he doesn't call it social media, he writes social control media. I think that's correct. I think that's essentially correct. It's social control media.
Who's control? Because it's not your own government that's controlling it, is it? When we've seen that data coming through, the US election was interfered by Russia both times. Brexit was interfered by Russia in social media posts, which has been bolstered by the platforms. They're fine. They're fine with that. Even though it's technically their state enemy, they're like, we'll just bring us your dollar. We don't give a shit. We don't care if the building's on fire. We made our money. Woo, woo. And it's causing absolute chaos. And that's exactly what the state enemy want. Like, they just want chaos because divided they fall.
One for you here, Helen.
What?
Defending against USB drive attacks with Wazoo. Basically implementing the non-executable stuff that you wrote about.
Mm-hmm. Microcode is going to become a bigger deal because it's trusted. Yeah. It's a trusted system. There is no such thing as a trusted application. There shouldn't be. It's back to zero trust. We are moving away in our main operating system of Windows and Mac. We're moving away from zero trust and we're moving into, it's been there a while, but they're now doing those security updates straight to the chip, no questions asked. And those security updates we've seen now for the last 6 years or so, they can be injected with anything. You can put a trigger in that leads to almost anything, and it will always default back to that malware. So they're incredibly dangerous, and we're seeing more and more about storage devices having the same problem because they're updated with firmware. The fact that we thought that operation code and firmware would be too complicated for humans to understand is a joke. Human bloody wrote it.
Yeah, especially with language models, you can just dump it into and tell you what it is.
There should be no microcode that isn't checked by the system. Yes, it will slow things down, but our CPUs are stronger, our GPUs are stronger.
It's the same with signature calculation in antivirus software. It's the same. It doesn't require much power at all to do that.
Well, that doesn't really work with signature. And I guess the only way, when I spoke to the German researchers on microcode injection, the only way to really do it is to actually check what processes are happening. So to actually have your defense system look into that. And if it does start messing about with,
signatures are only limited to existing virus signatures that have been reported by it. It doesn't mean that it's not a virus. It just means it hasn't been reported or mass used yet.
But there's a pattern of behavior. It's very easy for Windows, et cetera, to sign off and say that the firmware is secure and to let the machine know that, and it should only be installing things that are signed, that are official. Just like it does all its other codes,
I guess that's what TPMs are supposed to be for.
I know. But then we've got this,
That security model, I would call that security model zero trust, except for privileged access by the prefect.
Exactly. And the fact that you can shove that on a USB stick and it can infect every system that it interacts with and potentially laterally move is insane. Because they can put any code on that. It's not restricted. People are like, maybe it's restricted. No, because some of these drives are like a terabyte, 2 terabytes. and some of the stuff I was looking at, the most of the drive of 32 gigabytes is being used for malware. Really is. It's hidden in the middle. And it was the majority of it. So that's actually a very powerful code. That's a lot that could be in that code right then. And we can't find out because it's got Playfish encryption. So good luck.
Oh,
I got Come on, Ed. Yeah.
I was just going to say, Andy, I think Mozilla have heard you moan about Firefox because they've just rolled a load of user agreements back.
Yay!
They were basically told that their terms was way too broad over their license language and what they were doing with the user data. And they've now just rolled all the terms back to make them more specific.
Okay. Well, yeah, that might improve it. But my problem with Mozilla has always been that they're very deceptive.
Yeah.
Again, like similar to like what we've just been talking about with the UK Gov, you know, it's about blatantly obvious things that everyone who's not even an expert knows about. Yeah. And you're basically lying or counter signaling that or conspicuously omitting it, right? So it's a question of credibility. That's what it is. It's just like it's very dishonorable behavior. You've lost trust, and that's the new currency, not the data. The new currency is trust.
Trust,
if you want
yeah.
trust, you know, that's where you need to be thinking. Yeah. I've got a really funny one here, actually. Well, funny issue, I think, for me is about a lady called whose surname is Null. If your name, if you're actually, and there are actually people called like Null, so like she's, you know, not having much fun in her life with databases.
No.
But then, yeah, that is submitted by somebody called Mr. Close Parens Semicolon Drop Table Account Semicolon. So,
most states in the US, like California, it's very easy to get a custom license plate with whatever you want on it.
Oh yeah, and they're cute
compared to the UK. Someone thought, to avoid speeding tickets and fines and all this stuff, they would get the license plate Null. And it turns out that they got everyone speeding tickets that weren't assigned to their license plate instead. So they got thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars weekly of tickets coming through the post because their Null license plate was matched in the database to the tickets that weren't assigned yet to someone else's license plate.
That's awesome.
Do you reckon Mr. and Mrs. Null were the reason that they had to pull the AI welfare system recently? Just crash their entire AI network. They got all the benefits or none at all.
did one person like get everybody's dolce?
No. It's just the government rolled out this huge announcement. We're going to be the leaders of AI and we're going to invest in the welfare system first, the most expensive system, the one that when it goes wrong, you know, Romanians start ordering millions of pounds worth of benefits through, which we saw in 2020. We're still seeing the fallout of that now. They thought, screw it, we'll just make universal credit, have an AI bot, and see how it goes. It didn't go very well, and they pulled it. And I guess we're back to this. Why did you not test that? Are we just going to repeat the post office?
No, they were. That was the test.
Yeah, but not live. Not a live test.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, that's what the model's moved to. You have to get with this. Like, software engineering in many places has just moved to live testing.
Test in prod.
The welfare system was not the one to test straight away. There are loads of, like the DVLA, that's a good
one. They don't care. Mm. The developers in that situation who are told what to do and what to roll out, they can't really be held accountable for the moral bankruptcy of the process they're operating under, which is this. And this has been the problem with Silicon Valley for like 20 years, right? And that's what I wrote in Digital Vegan, is that they somehow got a license to use the entire world as their personal laboratory to try things out and see what works and what doesn't, with no ethical oversight. None of that could have ever happened in universities or whatever. So by becoming, you know, tech companies making products that everyone's consuming, you're in a position to do unbounded studies, right? Scientifically unbounded studies. So that's why you can attract like psychologists who want to work in areas that probably couldn't get ethics for in a university, right? And you know, like companies like Google didn't keep their chief ethicists for very long, right? Mm. So you see kind of how that works, what you end up with. Is lab rats in which like the live population, the people who are using things like benefit systems, government systems, whatever, are being used as to test features, and including entire changes of paradigm. Like some PR person in UK Gov has said, "What, everything's AI now?" It's like, we'll just do a global replace of blockchain with AI. And then now that's where you have to send all the money to. So they've just gone out, like found the first contractor that said, "Oh yeah, we do chatbots, mate. Yeah, we got AI. Yeah, got loads of that. I'm in the garage, mate. Yeah." So what we'll do is bish bosh. A load of other people have really worked their asses off. And you look at the web content of UK government, it's amazing. It's like something to be really proud of. It's just like, oh wow, this, the flow of this, someone's really thought about it, they thought about all the questions, you know, someone's put effort into making that a useful resource. And then someone's come along and said, oh, we'll just put a chatbot there. But also it's cruel to experiment on people. You know, you can never prove it, but lives get lost in those sorts of situations.
They do. And that's the problem. It's the worst situation. That's what I mean. You could have chosen another back-end system that doesn't cause a loss of life potentially to test this on if you need to test it in a live environment. Starting with our heavier system, other than the NHS, that it probably goes NHS and then the welfare system. You know, we're messing with old people at a time in yeah. critical crisis of finances. Yeah. They can't afford the heating. If they get an error with their pension, that's it. They're not going to have homes.
Well, we'll all be old at some time, or worse. Yeah. So, if you're kind of tinkering with that kind of stuff, and you're thinking because you're young, hey, well, this doesn't affect me. Yeah. Think about how long it's going to take to fix all the stuff you fucked up before you're old, right? Mm. And you're a victim of your own tools, because you will be.
Yeah.
You know, I understand that we want to use AI, and to some extent, as long as we do it ethically, I'm in support of that. It's great that we're going to be taking on a much more tech front. We needed that for a long time in the UK, but it needs to be done ethically and it needs to be done correctly. And this was just an example of unethical, but at least it was pulled before it did any real damage. And I guess that we have maybe learned some lessons from the post office.
Yeah,
We're monitoring those systems, and when they do go wrong, we pull them. So at least we're getting somewhere with it. But again, we need to be really, really careful where we're introducing this AI.
There's just a huge lack of social consideration of people's living arrangements and the way that these systems integrate with people's lives. They're just horrendously out of touch, and that's the problem.
Right. And that's who made the decision, isn't it? People who are not dependent on a welfare system.
Yeah.
People who've never been dependent and don't understand that. People who don't have to worry about their pension because they've got their Cayman Island money coming in.
Exactly, yeah.
Hey, I've got a quote here. This is from someone called Susan Landau, as in Landau Calrissian, kind of writing in Lawfare, which is a journal of lawfare, right? I mean, for those of you that know that such a thing exists, about the UK government, about the Apple thing, right? And the question was, why don't they know better? and I thought, that's great. That's the key question. Why don't they know better? Because we always get back to this. There's two possibilities, you know, incompetence and malice. You can have both. You can have incompetence and malice superimposed, or neither. Right? It's the full alphabet of possibilities. Right? But why don't they know better? Kind of implies this like lack of expertise or incompetence. And I just thought it's a really good article that in lawfaremedia.org, Susan Landau, an interesting read. Actually, four of the original Five Eyes, right?
Right.
Four of the original Five Eyes, Australia, Canada, etc., are completely in disagreement and moving the other way and oppose the UK's policy on that. So this isn't a Five Eyes thing, right? This is a British, a UK thing.
Right. But that's concerning because we need to have consensus. They're our strongest allies and we share a lot of information. Mm. Fragment away from that, it damages our national security and theirs as well. So we need to find a way to join up again and find consensus. And that might mean that the UK go, okay, well, actually, we agree with four out of five of you. Maybe we'll step back on a few points. Maybe we're incorrect because we're being outvoted by our nearest friends and allies.
Mm-hmm.
We have a habit of wanting to overspy in situations that we don't need to overpeer into, for example.
This girl won't love you. She'll never even look at you. You don't stand a chance because you're no good. You don't have what you need to have. And for this, you suffer. Because you haven't bought our product. You just cannot ever be happy unless you buy it right now and become better. Advance to popularity. All from the comfort of your armchair. So attractive. So sublime, so subscribe. Subscribe and rate higher on our Gullible Index. With a high Gullible rating, we can sell on your personal details at a premium to to other advertisers.
I'm so happy since I bought this.
Buy and subscribe today.
Platform. Oh yeah, there's a couple of ideas for just for episodes or things to do. One was to do one on access control.
Yes,
because I think that's something that everybody hears, and it's absolutely pivotal concept.
I teach it all the time as well.
It's in it's in everybody's lives, but nobody really, no one talks about someone. What's access control?
And what it's so on a Windows and a Linux environment as well. It'd be really good to get in the tech of that.
Mm. Oh, good. Yeah, we could do some practical stuff on that. That would be really nice with screens and stuff. But also, like, in on a conceptual way of helping people disambiguate all of the things like authorization and authentication and, you know, that sort of stuff.
Mm.
So they know, understand what the conceptual differences are. And, you know.
Do you know what? The advice has changed for the British government as well. They've changed. So the password control, they're suggesting that you don't use special characters or potentially numbers or capitals anymore.
Oh, so it's following NIST. NIST, we talked about
NIST. It's going opposite from NIST, isn't it? Because I think NIST is still saying use special characters.
No, that's in alignment with NIST, that one, Helen. Yeah.
Yeah, so they've dropped that and they're saying to use just a really long password, to use a phrase because it's easier to remember, which we've been saying for a long time. But I think that you should still probably try and use some special characters because I think we can talk about how, you know, brute force attacks, if it is just letters, it's easier to get to.
Actually, yeah, dictionary attacks especially.
Yeah. So actually, yes, use a long word, but chuck in a bloody question mark or something.
Yeah, it's a salt. I call it salt and pepper.
Right.
You've got a nice long passphrase and then you just go through and kind of pick a few cheeky ones. The trouble is, it's still mnemonic. You'll remember it, but it's not very portable because you end up on like a Spanish keyboard or something. It's like, oh. I told you about that time I was in Portugal. I had to send an email and there's like no way to get to the at on the standard keyboard, so I had to cut and paste it from a web. I had to log on to a web browser, find it, cut and paste it into the terminal to send email. Yeah,
you have to memorize the alt code for it. That's how you do it.
And the CPU, and I can't afford another computer. I said, once we get pay, I'm going to go out and buy a nice Linux. So I've got a powerful.
Yeah, I reckon if you just installed it on the computer you've got already, it would run.
No, I can't do that. It's a custom built one, and it literally, they said it will probably.
She wants it for games. Let Helen keep her machine for games.
I bought it for gaming.
Just dual boot it then.
No, when
the money comes, get the new box.
I'm going to get a lovely new laptop that's proper Linux so that the drivers aren't fucked.
Okay.
Because that's the other problem, that my mouse doesn't fucking work on my laptop. I dual booted in Linux because the fucking HP have decided to fuck me over on the code. So every now and then the mouse craps out and I have to shut it.
It doesn't even have mouse drivers for
Linux. It doesn't have a proper Linux mouse driver. No, they've only put the fucking Windows. It'll be the legacy ones that are Windows based. I know, and most builders do that. And yet HP make a Linux laptop.
Yeah, but the trackpad they use is just binary input. You can literally write a driver in 5 minutes.
I know, but they'd be like, oh no, it's Windows only. This is Windows. They buy all the fucking firmware companies out.
That's the only reason Intel still existed for ages, because they paid Microsoft to basically only use their CPUs in their laptops.
Yeah.
Everything I've got here is kind of built from the motherboard up, so... I did have more choice about what went on into it or on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just don't have time to build new boxes anymore.
No, they take so long now. Yeah. Because they're so small, the components, everything's tiny, and you need that stupid small fucking screwdriver. I miss the days of just like proper chunky shit.
Mm.
Yeah. I've got most my mini ITX, and the one that Ed gave me as well. I got one here that's a kind of really small form factor thing, and it's more like a Raspberry Pi and a giant heatsink.
A tiny little screwdriver to do this for ages with your fingertips. Yeah, and then you drop the screw in the machine, and that's it. It's fucked.
Then you're rattling it around.
That was us at the Mayflower. And we'd have like the proper ones, but it would always drop off the magnet, and you're like, "Fuck, sweet, it's the fucking drive one, the main one." So you'd be like, "Fucking hell."
Yeah, I do miss the days when you could build a machine without needing a bench microscope.
Those ATX power cables that are like that wide.
Yeah.